All right, folks, we are back on the T-Talk Podcast, Season 2, Episode 2. I'm sitting finally in the studio with Scott McCloud. Scotty, how are you?
I'm doing great. Happy to be back in the studios.
I know. It feels good to have you back down here. I apologize for the audio last week. I asked Scott to record this on his own at home, and
I messed up.
A little bit of a boomer issue, I would say.
Oh, no. I don't blame it on that. It's not a generation gap. I'm a pretty technical guy. Just for some reason, I forgot to turn on that mic. But give me credit, I had a backup mic. So
you did. You did. Nothing beats the time that we came into the studio, recorded for an hour, but I didn't push record.
It was only half an hour. Don't knock yourself off.
Yeah, it sounded better as an hour.
Yeah, there you go.
let's wrap up the Sony Open. Obviously wrapped up at the end of last week with Cam Smith, Australian, picking up a win at a great time for Australia. His first victory on the PGA Tour by himself. He's obviously picked up a win in the Zurich with Jonas Blix. Great guy, Jonas Blix. Like that guy a lot. But great condition. Great conditions. Oh, wow. What great conditions. Sunny with a high of 75.
So it did not look like Hawaii.
No.
No. Not what you'd expect.
I was watching on TV and I was like, my wife walks in. Where is this? Like palm trees. Looks beautiful. Ocean in the background. Just black skies.
Yeah. It looked like he was in the middle of a hurricane in Costa Rica or something like that. I don't know what the deal was, but, you know, it didn't play like it normally does for the Sony Open. But, you know, in the end, it got very interesting. And primetime golf, which is, always good. I talked to a lot of people that were, like, excited because of primetime golf and be able to watch it. But we certainly, nobody really expected the ending the way it was, that's for sure.
No, not at all. But it was exciting. Another playoff, 2 weeks in a row.
Yeah.
Playoff. I like playoffs.
Commissioner Jay Monahan said he'd love to see a playoff in every single event. And guess what? 2 for 2 in 2020.
Let's keep it going. But as I mentioned, Cam Smith obviously, you know, picks up a win that gets him $1.18 million. They were doing birdies to help the fight the cause going on in Australia with all the fires going on.
Yeah.
He described it as a win for Australia, which I think is a perfect description.
Yeah, it really was. And I mean, there's six Australians in the field, and I think they raised over $30,000 with just their birdies and their eagles and the donations they were getting regarding that. And a good chance as well to have a platform for him to stand up there and be able to say that and really, you know, encourage donations and to let people know, you know, how dramatic this is in the country and how severe it is. And any chance they can get to publicize that so that they can get some relief and get some people supporting that is a great thing. And certainly, that profile for Cam Smith, he's been known as a good player, but, you know, obviously he got a lot of attention with the President's Cup. Well, we can mention that a little bit. And obviously he got a lot of attention there as far as talking about other players. But for him to come through, you know, he's an immense talent, and to see him win, unfortunately, you know, Brendan Steele sort of took the gas a little bit there, but in the end, Smith made that putt on 18 to force the playoff.
Absolutely. And we'll get to Steele in a second, but we, you know, I want to keep on this Australian thing
going.
Yeah, for sure. Because we actually have another Australian on the podcast.
We do.
Cam Davis, who was in the field last week, coming off his career high on the PGA Tour with a T9. He kind of goes into the idea of Cam Smith and being a good guy and everything. Well, so we'll chat about that later. But back to Steele. Safe to say he based on his comments after, he lost this tournament before he teed off, with his quote, I'm just a California kid who does not like to play in the rain. Hate to break it to you. If that's your mindset going into the golf tournament on the final day when you are leading by 3,
not good.
You're not going to win.
No, not at all. And you know what? You have to learn to be a good player in whatever conditions you're facing. And it's just unfortunate. I mean, +3 over his last 8 holes, including the playoff hole. And, you know, a lot of people sit there and talk about a choke. Some people were blaming Ryan Palmer because, you know, it took him, it was 15 minutes for Steele to have to hit, or he had to wait for him to hit the shot, the second shot into 18, the par 5. And a lot of people were yelling at Ryan Palmer over social media or whatever. Well, you know what? I get it. A lot of people are saying, hey, Ryan Palmer should hit a provisional or whatever. You're forcing Brendan Steele. But in the end, Ryan Palmer said it right. He didn't hit the shot. Brendan Steele did.
Mm-hmm.
So he was the one who missed the green severely, obviously made a par. Cam Smith, ties him. And then, you know, in the playoff, he jets it over the back of the green and then doesn't convert, and Cam Smith wins, and you can't take it away from Cam Smith.
Nope.
I know people felt bad for Brendan Steele, but you know, he's going to have other opportunities. He's a great player, and Cam Smith won this.
Yeah, I like to focus on the positives, and that's being Cam. I think what Ryan Palmer did, give this guy credit. This guy could have taken a paycheck and walked away and not even had a chance to win this tournament.
Sure.
He goes, you know what? It's raining.
Yeah.
I'm in a bunker. Give me the 3-wood.
Yeah.
Is what he pulled.
For sure.
And that is a guy that's obviously, it's different stats. Ryan Palmer's been on the tour forever.
Yeah, he's made 27 million plus on
the tour. So it's a little
tour,
bit different than, say, you know, I guess Cam Davis, who's on the podcast later. If he did that, he's probably laying up for the paycheck at that point because, you know, he doesn't have that big paycheck. However, at the end of the day, you know, they're still golfers. Money is money. And Ryan Palmer played for what he thought could potentially get him the win. Obviously, it didn't even get him in the playoff. But still, that's I appreciate that. I appreciate that a lot.
Yeah, I do. And Ryan's a great guy. I've managed to meet him a little bit through the guys at Acra. He plays some of their equipment. He's good friends with Sean Mullen, who you know from Kingston here. And, you know, sat and had a beer and a burger with him a couple times. And, you know, he's a great guy, and he loves golf, and he wants to win. You know, he doesn't want to just make the check. And, to jump on a 3-wood and give it a while. I mean, here's the thing. He pushed it right. He flared it. You don't know it's going to hit a big TV screen and go shooting off in the middle of nowhere where you can't find it. Should he have hit a provisional? Well, you're not really expecting to lose it on the PGA Tour. I mean, you're
it's pretty rare.
It's fairly open out there on the right side, even though there's lots of trailers and all sorts of different things. But there's, you know, lots of fans, spectators, you know, officials, all sorts of different things. Yeah. So anyways, in the end, yeah, he went for it, which was great. But all credit to Cam Smith.
Absolutely. Now I have a rant though.
All right.
I've been ranty on this podcast recently. I'm going into a rant, and this one's about the TV coverage, and specifically Patrick Reed. So Friday afternoon, or I guess it's night, primetime TV.
Are we bringing up this guy again?
Let me finish. Patrick Reed is not making the cut.
Right.
You know what? I didn't even check if he made the cut. That's how mad I was done with watching it. I don't think he made the cut. I hope he didn't make the cut. If he made the cut, can you just check on this? So tell me after my rant first. So he's plus four. The cut is hovering around minus one. We are watching every single shot of this guy on the tour. And not only that, they're going on about how great he is, how elite of a player he is. Positive thing after positive thing after positive thing. When really, there's nothing positive about this guy other than he is a good golfer. And I get it. If he's in the top of the tournament, show this guy. But this guy deserves zero publicity at all right now. However, I get why they're doing it. They're trying to change his image. And you know what doesn't help changing your image, Patrick Reed? Sending a cease and desist to Brandel Chambly calling yourself a cheater when that is exactly who you are. Patrick Reed, if you send me a cease and desist, I ain't ceasing or desisting. I'm going to keep going on you. That's probably not true. I don't have the money to pay for him. But you know what? You know what I'm saying? Like, what is the PGA Tour thinking here? Right
I don't
now?
Know why. You know, I mean, for a player, he finished plus three and he missed the cut. I'm not sure why. I mean, granted, you're right. He's one of the top players in the world. He was in a playoff the week before. But if he's not playing well, then, you know, why show him? He's not Tiger Woods. You know, if it's Tiger Woods, I'll watch Tiger Woods shoot 90, as will most of the world. Patrick Reed, not so much.
No. And the problem I have is, and it's going to segue ourselves into our next guest, is Cam Davis was out on the golf course all day. I may saw one or
playing
two
well.
Shots on Friday
exactly.
of him. Maybe. Yeah. And then I'm seeing Patrick Reed trying to get up and down from a bunker. Granted, the time he did, he made like a 60-footer. You know, up and down or something ridiculous, but still, I don't need to see it. There's no reason. The PGA Tour is hurting everything with this guy. We talked about it last week. Stop showing him. Stop talking about him in a positive way because it doesn't change his behavior.
Well, the thing is, too, I mean, there's so many fine players that are out there playing the tour. I mean, I think it's a responsibility of the tour to have a little bit of effort for character development. If they're looking at it from an entertainment standpoint, I mean, you know, again, we're talking about Cam Davis. I mean, Cam Davis won an Australian Open. I mean, you know, this guy is an up-and-coming Australian player. He's playing well. Tell that story and at least spend your time, you know, with your producer to dig that up and to tell that story. Don't just go back to the same narratives that everybody's been talking about for the last little while.
I'm sick of it. I'm sick of Patrick Reed.
Done.
And I'm done with my rant.
All right. Good enough.
But foreshadowing, I have another one after our interview.
All right.
And I don't know what your thoughts are, but I'm going to go on a rant for a while after our interview. Before I do, we got some positive stuff to get into.
We have
Cam Davis
sure.
on the podcast, Australian coming off a T9, 2017 Australian Open winner out on the Korn Ferry Tour. Finished last year as a rookie. Yes, he did. But he started last year as a rookie on the PGA Tour. He's into his second season. And we talked to Cam about his career and also what it's like to be out on the PGA Tour. So we hope you enjoy this interview. All right, we'd like to welcome into the podcast Cameron Davis, just coming off a T9 at the Sony Open down in Hawaii. Currently on a small layover at LAX. How's it going today, Cam?
Not too bad. Hanging in there after a bit of flying, but still got a little bit to go, but it's going good.
Yeah, so where are we off to this week? We got a new tournament. You heading over there now?
Yeah, Palm Springs for the American Express tournament. So, going from wet and windy to playing in a dome, it's going to be nice.
what are your thoughts on that tournament? We were kind of talking off air before you got on the phone, and the idea of having to get ready for multiple golf courses with, you know, not many days to do it, fresh off Hawaii. How do you prepare for something like that?
Well, I mean, it's nice that I played there last year, so I've got already got an idea of what those three are going to be like. I'm still going to try and see all three of them. It just becomes a little bit busier in the early part of the week there, but probably going to play two and walk the other one and just refresh the memory. But, you know, once you get past that point, it's all just about hitting it where you're aiming, and you can still put good scores together and win tournaments that way. But, definitely have better preparation in Sony than I'm going to have for this one, but yeah, it'll be good. I mean, there's only so much you can do, yeah.
I guess you could just yell at your caddy a bit more.
Oh, of course, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. let's go back a week, though. Obviously, yeah. The Sony Open just finished up. You're coming off your career best finish on the PGA Tour with a T9. How are you feeling after that week? Where's your game at?
It's going pretty good. I've been making a few little changes over the last couple of months, and it's great to see that they're starting to turn into some good results. Makes me feel like I'm really starting to work on the right things and just enjoying myself a little bit more out there, which is, I think, a big change from where things were at last year. So, yeah, I'm just really looking forward to every week I get now. And, same goes for this next week coming up. But, I had a great time in LA. So, everything's feeling pretty good.
That's awesome. Well, one thing that you probably was a little bit different of this week after day two last week, you were tied for the lead. How was that feeling? That was a first for you. Is that correct?
Yeah, it was the first time I'd been in the lead at any time since I turned pro. But I don't know. Like it didn't feel that dissimilar to what I've already experienced out there before. I think I did put a little bit more pressure on myself, but it makes you realize, it's all just self-driven sort of stuff. Like, no one else puts that pressure on you. You end up kind of feeling it, and little things change that, before you go out in the round, you're thinking, I'm going to try and keep a level head and just do everything the way I normally do it. And for me, just not having my best stuff and watching the other guys in my group play really well kind of made me feel like I was losing an opportunity and getting left behind a little bit. But, if I had had a few more experiences like that before, I'm sure things would be a little bit different the next time. But it was great just to see that for the first time. I did get a lot out of this weekend and still managed to play really well. So, just all learning for the next time around.
Yeah, and one of the big things that came out of the weekend, and it was obviously out of some tough stuff going on back home in Australia, where all the six Aussies in the field that were playing this week were raising money for fire relief. Do you know how much personally that the Aussies were able to raise, and how are things going for yourself back home?
I've got no idea how much everyone's raised. I know Aussie golfers all over the world, men and women, have been doing a really an amazing job raising money. It's got to be a pretty large amount. I think the PGA Tour was chipping in this week as well, and Aussie sports people, not just golf but tennis, cricket, all that, it made a huge difference. So it hasn't really directly affected me where my family is. I think we're probably going to be okay, but we've still been getting all the smoke, and just the smoke is pretty tough. But it's nothing like losing a house or its entire sort of region, and the amount of devastation that's done is pretty incredible. So we're just doing every little bit that we can to help out at this point, and it does feel nice that we're able to be in a position where we can help, and so that's what we're doing, and I think we are having some sort of impact, which is good.
Absolutely, and obviously Cameron Smith, a fellow Australian, picked up the win this week. After leading after two rounds, it still probably felt like, it slipped away a little bit, as you said. But was that kind of a good second place, I guess, having Cam, a fellow Australian, win, especially during these tough times happening in your home country?
Oh, yeah. With a lot of focus being on people back home in Australia, it was very cool to have an Aussie win, especially someone that was dedicating every birdie for the week was going to be money put towards them, and having a great week, just the extra incentive to do well paid off well for him. But also just great to see, he's a great guy, so it was great to see him get over the line and get an individual win, because he's definitely been good enough. He got a team win, but I'm sure that first win individually was eating away at him for a while, so it was very cool to see him win. So, yeah. Supported him all the way through to the end in that playoff. It was great to see.
Yeah, he seems like a guy that other players will root for. He seems kind of chirpy out there, especially I think the President's Cup he fit right in for that. Especially getting after guys like Patrick Reed, who I doubt you'll get into those details, but in my opinion deserved it. So I was probably an easy guy to root for regardless of the situation.
Yeah, he's very outgoing. He, loves the chat. He's just one of the guys. He's just really great. I haven't spent too much time around him. He kind of turned pro just as I was starting to get into the amateur scene, so I didn't get to spend too much time with him when we were younger. But out here, I've bumped into him quite a few times, and he's been really great. As someone who's already been out here for a few years, but still very young, it's nice to have that kind of guy to talk to and get a few practice rounds with and pick the brain a little bit.
Absolutely. Let's go back to it. You obviously said you are you're still a young guy. You're only like 24, is that correct? 25 maybe now?
Yeah, 24 still. Yeah.
Nice. I miss those days. Scott, that for Scott, our co-host, that's half of his life ago, but we won't get into that. But back, I guess almost 3 years now is kind of when your career really took a big turn, winning the Australian Open. Can you just kind of share how big that was for your career, especially for a young guy, just 22, just starting his pro career?
Well, it came at a pretty pretty important time for me. I had been pro for about a year at that point and managed to get my card out in the McKenzie Tour. So I had a season playing in Canada, and I think I played all right in my first event in Vancouver, made about $7,000, and then I think I made about $7,500 for the year. And it was a pretty rough year. I thought I was really well prepared for it, coming off a pretty good finish to my amateur career. But then I kind of hit a bit of a wall, and all my good golf kind of left me when I thought it was going to continue to keep coming out. And I wasn't at a point where I was going to quit or anything like that, but I was at a point where I was doing, I was just going back to tour school and not really sure where it was going to lead me. I did really want to play in the States, but at that point, it was very much up in the air where I was going to be ending up. And I wanted to give the web.com tour school a crack, and I was going along okay with it. I actually got through second stage just before I went over to Australia to play it. So that was my one little bit of form before I came back to Australia, which gave me a little bit of hope. But then I missed the cut the week before at the New South Wales Open, which is a relatively small event compared to the Aussie Open, and went in with no expectations, and things all fell into place. And really from there, I mean, I had conditional status in the web.com, which doesn't give you any start, but winning the Australian Open was not just a massive confidence boost but for me, because I know I'm all right, I do have the game to win tournaments, but it gave me some opportunities early in the year on the web.com tour to play some events and work my way through the reshuffle back onto the tour. So pretty much through the Aussie Open, I managed to get myself onto the web.com tour, which after making the most of a couple of opportunities there, very quickly managed to get myself out on the PGA Tour. So really it was the start of me getting to where I am now. And yeah, it's a great memory to have and to look back on. And yeah, it really was the springboard for me to go, okay, I can do this. And yeah, it's been a great little run since then.
Absolutely. I mean, you brushed by it, but I wouldn't say you just had a decent start out on the Korn Ferry Tour of the web.com. You picked up a win in Nashville. I guess that brought your confidence to another level, knowing, you know, you can beat some former PGA Tour winners out there. What was that win like? Do you remember that one like it was yesterday, just like the Australian Open?
Yeah, pretty well. The beginning of that week feels like a little bit more difficult to remember, but the last round was just one of those rounds where it kind of all came together, and you know, both of those wins came from a long way back, and to be honest, didn't really feel like I had that much of a chance, so I didn't have anything to lose, and everything just kind of came together right on the right time and the right day, and just snuck over the line both times. But that one was really cool as well, because all of a sudden I went from just being happy to play the next week to all of a sudden now I'm in the top 25 and got a chance at a tour card. So that really turned the year around pretty drastically as well. And spent the rest of the year trying to battle my way inside the top 25. But to be honest, once I started thinking about the 25, I started putting more pressure on myself again and didn't really perform well at all up until the end of the season, when it kind of started all over against the web.com finals, and I was back in a position again where I had nothing to lose, and that seemed to free me up to play some of my best golf. So that's kind of where those little bits of form came from. And yeah,
so then you obviously get out on the PGA Tour, that, as you mentioned, last year being your rookie year. Prior to going out there and you getting your full status, did you get any advice from the older guys out there, you know, the Jason Days, Matt Jones, any of those names that Australians, you know, are known for, I guess, in the professional golf game?
Yeah, I mean, all of them have been very friendly to me. I would say the guys who probably spent the most amount of time with me were Rod Pampling and John Senden. Couple of the they've been at it for a long time, and I managed to get quite a few practice rounds with them and lunch with them and talk to them quite a lot. But those two would probably be the standouts for me in terms of the people that have given me the most time and shared the most wisdom with me about it. They've been great. I mean, I know John's going to be playing next week. I think Rod's moving on to the Champions Tour now, which I'm sure he's going to tear up. But yeah, very thankful to them both giving me time.
Is there anything specific they told you back then when you first got out on tour?
To be honest, it's little things about preparation, little things about just, you know, what things work for them when they're in tough situations, and, you know, ways to work your driving range sessions, to what to look for during the practice rounds. Just little things here and there that just definitely add up. And I mean, not all of them are necessarily the things that I take into my own game, but just that way of thinking kind of was able to get me thinking about, okay, well, what would work for me in this situation. So, I mean, that's the one thing I've seen more than anything else at the top tour is everyone's really figured out their way of doing things. And the more little bits of advice you get here and there, the more little pieces you can put together and try and test. And you know, it really seems like the guys out on the main tour have it all figured out, and the guys who are trying to get there are still just trying to find that little something to bring all the pieces together, and I feel like, yeah, I've had a little bit of help along the way from those guys to give me a little bit of a step in the right direction when I've needed it. And now I feel like I'm starting to get to a point where, yeah, all those little pieces can start coming together. And now I've just got to, you know, just enjoy it, enjoy the journey, and, you know, just keep on doing what I'm doing.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, after speaking with your caddy, as we got to know each other a little bit at the Greenbrier, he mentioned that, you know, your work ethic is one of your greatest strengths, and that you're just a workhorse. You're on the range every single day. And for lack of better words, I think it's safe to say golf obsessed. Would that be a correct statement, would you say?
Yeah, I don't think that's changed since I was a kid. But yeah, I've always just, you know, golf course is pretty much my safe place, really. I just love being out there and hitting shots. And I think being on tour can take that away from you a little bit, because it makes it feel a little bit more like a job. But definitely, you know, having some enjoyment and just seeing good shots is one of the things that keeps me on the range working hard to get a little bit better. So yeah, I've had to cut back a little bit of the amount of time that I spend out there because it was getting a bit excessive.
Well, at least you're used to the sun, you know, being from Australia, you're not going to burn. Well, let's talk about the positive things about tour. I think a lot of talk lately has been the fact that it can feel like a job. You know, last year being your first year out there, got into your first major at the Open last year at Port Rush, made the cut as well, T39. What were your thoughts on your first major and the experience overall?
Well, it was actually 2017 at Carnoustie was the one that I got into.
Wow, terrible, terrible research on my part.
Oh, 2018, sorry. It was 2018. Off the 2017 Aussie Open, got me a start in that, through that qualifying series. But that was really cool, actually. That was a great experience. I played with Brooks in between majors that he'd won. He just won the US Open, was going on when we'd win the PGA straight after it, and I got to play with him in the final round. That was a pretty exciting round, just to see what someone who's winning majors plays like. But that was an awesome experience, but haven't been able to get into one since then.
Oh, well, I mean, coming off a T9, you're heading in the right direction. Who knows, right? Pick up a win this week and we'll... Yeah. Who knows where we'll see you. Speaking of Brooks and being a golf nerd and, you know, golf being your life, as you said, have you ever had that starstruck moment with anybody out on the PGA Tour where it was like, wow, like that's Brooks Koepka, or that's Tiger Woods?
I think the first time I see everyone, I think to myself, wow, that's pretty cool. I'm in the same place there. I mean, I definitely got a lot of that in my first PGA Tour event. It was 2016 at Mayakoba, just being on the practice facility early in the week and just seeing everyone that was up there. I was going, that's pretty cool. I've only ever seen these people on TV. And then, yeah, every now and then, you know, to be honest, I always seem to be at the golf course at a different time to when all the top guys are up there. I'm not really sure what their schedules are, but I don't really see them too often, so I don't have to worry about it that much. But when you play well, I guess you start to get yourself up into the places where, you know, you end up playing with them. And that's the aim, to try and get a little bit more of that. But when I played with Brooks, that's actually, you know, I felt like, different to the start of the week, I was already three rounds into a tournament and had a pretty good feel about how it was all going, and I'd been used to being around the other guys. And then when I got paired with Brooks, I'm like, all right, well, I'm on the same score as him, so I'm playing just as well as him. You know, there's no reason to be intimidated by him. Go out and have a good round, and just, you know, while I'm doing my thing, just have a little look and see what someone who's winning majors plays like, and I guess you can have a pretty good idea of where you stand. And yeah, it was really good for that. But, not so much anymore. I feel a little bit more like, you know, I've got the game to compete out there. I had periods of time where I felt like I had to play out of my skin in order to compete with them. But now I feel like I'm getting to the point where, okay, yeah, I am good enough to play in events. And in a week like last week just makes it a little bit easier to believe. So.
Is your workout routine the same as Brooks? Mm-hmm.
No, not at all.
Not at all.
I've got some work to do if I want to emulate that.
Yeah, I mean, that might be some things that would get you suspended at this point. That guy is massive. Is there any pairings you look for? Any guys that you try to that you love playing with that you've had a couple rounds with? Any good stories around that?
To be honest, pretty much everyone that I've played practice rounds with have been great. To this point so far, I have not come across anyone who's been difficult to play with or, doesn't want to have a chat at all. I mean, in terms of good stories, I feel like I'm not the sort of personality that really brings out people doing stuff that's story-worthy. But, I haven't had practice rounds with too many of the top 10 sort of players in the world, but I've played practice rounds with guys like Abraham Anser and Johnny Vegas and down to some of the Aussies like Mark Leishman and Cam Smith, and not so much stories, but just kind of good little pieces of information for me to pick up on. But so those rounds, other than being good to see what they're doing, don't really bring out too much other stuff.
I gotcha. Last year, another major returned back to Australia on the LPGA Tour with Hannah Green picking up the PGA Championship. Were you watching that tournament?
I did see the end of that one. That was so good to watch. I remember I was sitting in a hotel room cheering her on. So that was very clutch.
Yeah,
that
Hannah's a big favorite of ours. Her caddy is actually a local to our hometown, Nate Blasco.
How good.
Yeah, and so we were obviously cheering him on. Why don't we end? We'll end with a couple more questions here. You obviously coming off a T9, feeling good about your game. What would you say the strength of your game is right now? What are you working on?
So I'm pretty much just working on getting the golf swing a little bit simpler, so it's not constantly on my mind. There's something that I'm trying to get perfect, and just letting my imagination run wild a little bit while I go out and play now. Just first instincts, trying to feel some creativity out there. I think it was great to play Sony in so much wind because that definitely brought that side of my game out. And I think rather than trying to get too one-dimensional with the way that I play, which is what I kind of have been going down that sort of road for the last couple of years, I feel like I'm starting to bring back my a little bit more imagination and a little bit more creativity in my game that I used to have when I felt like I played some of my best golf as an amateur and as a junior and stuff. So that, combining that with just having a good time out there and enjoying it, I think is basically what I've been working on, and the last couple of tournaments have gone really well, and I'm just looking to continue to keep on working at that and get a little bit better at that. And I feel like the more time I spend doing it that way, the better things will get. So off to a good start so far.
It's a good mindset to have. What events are you looking forward to coming up?
Everyone I get into, I'm still in a position where I'm not really sure what I'm going to get. But there are a couple, like I love playing Pebble Beach. I love playing this one this week. I'd love to get into some really big tournaments, like back into the Genesis or into a major. But at this point, I'm kind of keeping it pretty close to me in terms of schedule. Just looking forward to the one next week and the next one that I get into after that.
Well,
pretty hard to look ahead, too far ahead. Yeah.
Yeah. If you get into the RBC Canadian Open, will we see you up here in Canada?
Oh yeah. Well, I played last year. Yeah, I'd love to come back.
Well, we'd love to have you back.
Yeah, I had a great time. Yeah.
We'd love to have you back. All right, Cam. Well, we really appreciate it. And we will make sure we're thinking of everybody back in Australia. If anybody has anything they can donate, make sure you donate to the fire, to stop the fires in Australia and help the country recover. Any final words from you, Cam?
Yep. Well, I can just follow on with that. I mean, yeah, everything that anyone can donate is going to be very much worth it in terms of helping people get back on their feet. A lot of people have lost homes and entire towns, really. So it'll be great to help them as much as we can get back on their feet. But other than that, just thanks for having me, and thanks for the chat.
Thank you, Cam, for that interview. We're cheering for Cam. We want him to get into the Waste Management Open. I'm heading there.
Yeah, you are. So it'd be nice to get together with him, wouldn't it?
Do I have a bag to carry? We shall see. We don't know, but we shall see.
Oh, you didn't tell me that.
Well, you never know, right? Right. My life is, I'm the Forrest Gump of the golf industry. Let's get into some other things we got to talk about. A lot of stories coming out of the weekend. I said I had a rant. We'll get to the rant in a second. We're going to go over some small stories first. South African Open, obviously wrapped up. Brendan Grace picked up that. That was a tournament that meant a lot to him, being from South Africa, and his first national championship.
Yeah, it was, and the fact that he closed with a 62. I mean, Louis Oosthuizen looked like he was. I won't say he looked like he was in control, but he was leading. And then,
Louis always looks like he's in control.
I know, it's amazing.
One of the best golfers.
And again, it's a big event for him. But Brendan Grace 62 in the final round, and it was neat to watch that final round. The fact a lot of other players were shooting, 2 under, 3 under, whatever, and here's Brendan Grace shooting 62. So I mean, he went out and got this. It is an open qualifier event as well, so there were spots available in the open. And one of the other side stories was Marcus Armitage, who made a clutch birdie on the last hole. Very emotional. He had the fist pump going, and then his caddy was going nuts, which was fun to see as well. And then he ended up having a Twitter video later of him pushing around his luggage outside. He's like, oh, it's so glamorous or whatever like this. He was just basically lost. It sounded like he was trying to get to the airport. But, here's a guy who made his way into the Open. But Brendan Grace, super, super impressive. And, to shoot 62 in a big field. This is a 240-player field,
insane.
Which is kind of unusual. They merged the Joburg Open and the South African Open. It is a historic event, one of the longest-standing Open championships in the world, and that is why it's an Open qualifier event. So a big win for Brendan Grace and another 62. And, here's the guy who, shot a 62 in a major and has that record as well. But, a big win for him.
Absolutely. The Hong Kong Open was obviously going on as well. Wade Ormsby, another Australian, picked up a win.
Yeah.
Good time for Australia. They're proud right now. They're fighting
inspired.
For their country, but they're obviously fighting on the golf course, and they have a reason to be playing for, especially with all these donations going out.
Yeah, that was a rescheduled event a couple of months ago, just with the all the different events that are going on, political strife that's going on in Hong Kong. It was rescheduled, so he came back and won that and beat out some good players as well. Shane Lowry, the Open champion, was in the field. He finished second by 4 shots. Ormsby beat him by 4. It's not a long golf course, but it's a tight golf course. And then Tony Finau was over there, and he finished 5th.
Absolutely. And I do want to touch on, we didn't actually get to specific details in the interview with Cam about, where to donate or anything. I'm not going to tell you where to donate. Look up places to donate in your country that you are in, and you'll find a good charity that you believe in that will help Australia. So make sure if you have anything you can donate to do that. It does go a long way to rebuilding these communities that they're being burned to the ground, which is you hate to see it. That's
yeah, true. And you know what? This is a personal story for a lot of people. There's a lot of people going over to help. I know a cousin of my mother-in-law actually was over there. He's a firefighter and he works primarily in New Zealand, but he went over to Australia. And I know he was burned, actually. His hands are burned and he's now gone back to New Zealand for treatment. And this is affecting a lot of people in a lot of different ways. And, people are losing their homes, their businesses. Obviously, there's been a lot of publicity with how many animals have died as well. So it is great to see something like this happen with the Wade Ormsby story, Cam Smith story, getting some inspiration and, promoting that relief in the country and hopefully can raise some good funds to help them out.
All right. I mentioned I have a rant.
It's rant time again.
This is rant number 2. All right. Over the weekend.
Yeah.
Tiger Woods was caddying for his son in a tournament.
I know this.
Nine-year-old Charlie just out there, just playing a tournament, trying to live a normal life.
U.S. Kids Junior Tournament, Palm Beach County.
Finished T9. Awesome.
Well, actually, he ended up finishing 2nd, but he was T9 after day 1. Yeah. I followed this story.
Okay. that is a fact.
Keep going.
Finished 2nd. All right. So, Tiger Woods.
But.
He's out there catting, right?
Yeah.
There's a video that goes out on the internet of Charlie's swing.
Yeah.
Great swing. Beautiful swing. Here's my rant. This swing did not need to come on the internet.
No.
And for all the people out there that say it's just a golf swing. It is just a golf swing.
Mm-hmm.
For all the people say, what's the difference between this golf swing and any other young kid that goes viral in their golf swing. Mm-hmm. Here's the difference. Your dad's not friggin' Tiger Woods. Mm-hmm. This kid's never going to have any normalcy in his life ever to start. They can't go to a restaurant and just sit there. They can't just, you know, go to Disneyland and just go privately around, mm-hmm. unless he's probably with, you know, a handler, for lack of better terms. Let this kid just have a golf tournament. And for anybody out there, I've saw many people out there that, you know, I'm not going to mention names. They claim to be friends with Tiger Woods, retweeting this and talking about it in a good way. There's nothing positive about a 9-year-old kid that just wants to live his life and go play a golf tournament having his swing out there.
Yeah.
That it was creepy. The video's creepy. Yeah, it's from the bushes.
Not a fan of the video, that's for sure.
Let Tiger Woods, his father or his mother, post a video of the kid's swing. 100%. Not some guy from the bushes that, you know.
Unauthorized.
Unauthorized National Enquirer style videotaping TMZ crap, for the lack of better terms.
Yeah.
Again, is his swing great? Sure. Would I have lived my life?
Did you like those headlines when it's the next Tiger? And seriously.
Could be. Sure, could be. Just like
he's Charlie Woods. That's
just like
he
Jack
is.
Nicklaus's son was the next Jack. How did that work out, Gary, when you were playing
on the cover of Sports Illustrated?
What was that tournament, or the Bermuda Triangle Championship or whatever? It's so unnecessary. And any other take other than if you're saying it's just a golf swing?
Yeah.
It's not just a golf swing. When you're dealing with a kid that will never have any normalcy in his life, that when he's out there with the other 9-year-old kids, let him just be another 9-year-old kid out there. And I'm sure that's all Tiger was trying to do. I doubt he was even giving him advice out there. He's probably just carrying the bag and having a good time with his son.
Just being a dad.
Exactly. Just being a dad.
Yeah. So I'll give you my angle of it. And I'm with you on this. And this is how I approached it, because I was fortunate to have the opportunity that I had information first thing in the morning from another father who was playing in the tournament, who is a Canadian, and his son was playing in the tournament, and he happened to pass on the information that, guess what, Tiger Woods is out here caddying mm-hmm. for his son. To me, that was
enough.
That was it. And that was pretty much my tweet. It was the fact that Tiger Woods is out here caddying for his son. I hope Charlie has an opportunity to play the game, enjoy himself, and have a good time. That's it. Because after that, soon after that, I was offered an opportunity for pitchers. A couple of people had some pitchers and said, hey, would you be interested? I have some pitchers. I was there or whatever. I had one quick look at the photos that they had. They weren't taken with their permission, obviously. They were just like Tiger Woods and Charlie Woods walking by. It's like, really? No, I'm not interested in that, because really my note was, you know what? It's cool. Tiger's out caddying for his kid. That's awesome. That's all I need.
Here's the story. Tiger Woods is normal.
Yeah, there you go. He's just a guy with 2 feet.
He's a guy with a lot of money and a whole lot of golf tournament wins.
Yeah,
who cares?
Yeah, and I agreed. I mean, from that aspect of it, that you know, and there was a lot of people going on about, oh, what's it matter? He's out in the public. Well, you know, he's not really.
He's not out in public.
He's, you know, he's at a tournament, and the thing is that, man, this was a video taken from the bushes. I mean, God,
what would you think if your swing went viral from you're out at, you know, Bushwood Golf and Country Club, and somebody's got your swing, and now it goes viral. I'd still find that creepy if I didn't know. Like,
integrity over clicks. That's really what it comes down to. And unfortunately, people, they know, you know, they were taking the video because it's, you know, it's Charlie Woods, and they were going to talk about it. You know, and to draw conclusions from that was even worse. I mean, the fact is, you know, we want this kid to play golf, to enjoy golf, to love golf. It's going to be hard enough as it is, as you said. And it's just unfortunate that people extrapolate from that, and then all of a sudden there's, you know, they're pushing out headlines. They're going, he's going to win this many majors. And whoa.
Does follow-through remind you of anybody?
Oh, my God.
Sure. It reminds me of 100 people.
He's a kid just making a swing.
He's a kid. Yeah. I hate to bring it to you. In 2 years, his swing's not going to look like that. And knowing his father, his swing's going to change 35 times.
Yeah, it was pretty funny just seeing, you know, people trying to analyze his swing. And I'm like, oh, kid.
His path is a little bit.
Oh, my God. Oh, like, yeah.
Come on.
No, it was. And definitely, I was not a fan. And you know what? Again, it was the same thing. You have a choice. You have an opportunity. Some people tried to say, oh, it's harmless and whatever. You know what? Just think about it. it's important, really, yes, that he has some privacy. Other people argued, yeah, he's not going to have privacy during his whole life. But yeah, but that doesn't mean it makes it right. And just because someone pushes this out, you don't really have that permission. So don't bother. I mean, I'm very careful about even that my own as far as coaching and stuff like that.
Yeah.
People don't realize that even if you're a golf coach, I see a lot of golf coaches just pushing out video all the time of all their students or whatever. Unless you have their permission, that's not really allowed. So, I mean, you don't have the rights to their image just because you coach them. So a lot of people have to think about that as far as that privacy is concerned. In any case, you know, going back to as far as Charlie Woods, yeah, you know what? I didn't really need to see the video out there. Happy that, you know, Tiger was out there with his son caddying. That's great.
And I can tell you, obviously, you know, you've had minimal interaction with Tiger Woods. I've had zero interaction other than him almost hitting me with a golf ball at the 2013 PGA Championship. We know enough people in the industry that know Tiger Woods and some that know him well. I can tell you this for a fact, Tiger Woods hates that this is on the internet. And if you're in support of it, he's probably going to hate you next.
Maybe.
Tough news on the weekend. Obviously, golf course designer, architect, genius, probably designed some of your favorite golf courses and probably one of the most famous holes in North America in terms of a par three. Pete Dye passed away at the age of 94. Had a great life. Made a huge impact on the game, but
really did.
It's still sad news. What were your first thoughts? What were your first? You've been in the industry a long time. You probably met Pete before. Where do your mind go first?
Yeah, you know what? Alice had passed away last year. His wife, who was obviously very influential, a good player as well, and had done some design work with him. He had
famously designed the 17th hole at TPC Sawgrass
and the 13th at Harbortown, which is another one of my favorites. But you know what? He hadn't been well for a while, so we knew this probably was coming at 94 years old. But you know what? The biggest influence for him was not just the golf courses he created, but the number of architects that worked under him over the years, that apprenticed under him, that he influenced, and you know, that took different risks because of what he was able to do. So he pushed a lot of boundaries, whether it be, you know, TPC Sawgrass, obviously, you know, tons of other golf courses. And, you know, for me, I always loved the Ocean Course at Kewa Island, Harbortown Golf Links. I managed to play them back to back one time, and they're such a diverse
deal.
No, but you know, the neat part about playing them back to back is they're so different as far as architecture is concerned, but you know, they still demand so much from the player. I mean, you got one golf course that's just a brutal long test, you know, stuffed next to the ocean, and then Harbortown is this, you know, golf course that really demands shot making and precise ball striking, whatever. And the fact that, you know, you could play golf courses with him, and a lot of people would say, oh, well, he had a certain signature or whatever. You know what? There's a lot of golf courses you'd play that you wouldn't necessarily, if the name wasn't on there, you wouldn't necessarily know they're him, but they required a lot from you. And I played like the Cardinal, which is another one that a lot of people don't know, but it was a golf course that, you know, was early on in his career, and he had some really neat design philosophies, and he developed that over the time. The Golf Club in Ohio. I mean, there's so many. The list is endless. And I just always appreciated how he really made you think about what you were doing as far as playing the shots. From a strategy standpoint, he made you really, he deceived you a lot. And that was a really big skill for, you know, Alistair McKenzie as well. I mean,
Think about 17 at Sawgrass.
Well, it's just a mental.
It's 110 yards sometimes.
Yeah,
but
the cool part about 17 is you have to look at it when you're going up.
You can't close
16.
Your eyes.
And you know what? I remember playing it. I played it just once, but when I played it, the thing that really got to me was the fact that this is the test that's right in front of me right now as I'm going up the last half of 16. But you cannot take your eyes off of 17. And then when you get on 17, you're even on 17T, you're already looking at the lake on 18. And you're just going, wow. And you're just thinking, you know, what's this going to be like when all of a sudden you're playing for millions of dollars, you're under pressure and the wind's going and all the fans are there. I mean, you know, it just is an ultimate test from a mental standpoint and a physical standpoint. And I think, you know, he clearly was a genius. He's appreciated for that. And his legacy will last a long, long time.
Can't say it better myself. I think it's a good time to grab a quick break. Thank Pete Dye for everything he did for golf. And we're going to come back and hit the mail deck. It's the mailbag. We're going to answer your questions with Scotty and Stefan. It's the mailbag. What do you think of that? New intro song for the mailbag.
Nice. Yeah. Well, good vocals.
Good vocals out of tune to no tune. I was that out of tune. That's how good I am at being out of tune. There doesn't even need to be a tune and I'll be out of tune. All right, Scotty, you opened up the mailbag. You got some questions in there. You're going to ask them, and we're going to give some answers. Let's hit it.
Yeah, it was a quick one this week. It was a quick turnaround, but definitely got some coming in quickly. Really diverse this week, even to the point of it's some of the past guests asked a couple of questions I was almost scared of. But anyways, first one to kick off, a junior chimed in, and he started talking about when deciding a tournament schedule for competitive amateur, how many weeks in a row is too many to play? Do you want to handle that one?
I've never.
What's your feel?
My feel, like, I never was. I didn't pick up golf till I was 20.
So you're not describing yourself as a competitive amateur.
No, I'm not describing myself as competitive in anything.
Yeah.
Is there a level below amateur? no, I for me, I guess it's whatever makes sense for your family and you. I don't know. Like,
yeah.
I'm going to leave that to you. It doesn't really make sense. I got nothing. Whatever makes sense, right? Like, you don't need to play every single week. I still believe go and play a bunch of different sports, right? You got a baseball tournament 1 week, go to the baseball tournament, have some fun. Golf is a sport. I'm going to take it in a different direction. Golf is a sport that it can be very lonely.
Mm-hmm.
And it starts early, and there's nothing wrong with being an introvert, but it can almost put you into, you're seeing the same people, your caddy, your coach, your dad in this case. So go to those other type of tournaments and go be a kid, man. Just go be a kid.
Yeah.
Go do that, that high school party with your friends, in grade nine. Go have fun. You don't need to play golf every single week. But if that's what you want to do also, go and do that as well.
Yeah, one of the things we talked about last week in goal setting, and one of the things that we, try to do with players in goal setting from a coaching standpoint is try to get them to balance their lives a little bit. Mm-hmm. So when it comes to, the tournaments, the problem that happens is that now with some of the orders of merit and things that are out there for different various tours and stuff, the kids get caught up in the fact that, the more events I play, the more points I get. And that's great, and they work their way up. But the problem is it can have a reverse effect on them. In fact, if they play too many too often and don't give themselves time to recuperate, to rest kind of in between, their performance tends to be poor. And
we've
they just end up playing a long schedule with poor performances.
Not everyone's Sungjae Im.
No,
like, we've heard
exactly.
that from
yeah.
many people yeah. on here that are PGA Tour players. They're like, it's hard to give up a start on the PGA Tour,
right.
but I'm exhausted,
yeah,
and
yeah,
I can't give up start. Cam Davis just talked about that in the podcast. Like, prior to coming on, he's like, yeah, I just traveled from
right.
Hawaii to
yeah.
LAX, and now I'm sitting here for 2 hours, and I had to head down here, and then, next week I got in. It's exhausting,
yeah.
right? It's exhausting for them. Yes, you're not flying,
right.
but, like, if those guys wish they could have a week off when it's, like, their careers and mm-hmm. they don't know, you can actually make a choice to have a career off. It's just amateur golf.
Yeah, for sure. And I think even, especially for the juniors as well, I mean, they're trying to, they're trying to achieve goals. They're trying to do things. They're trying to maybe, get exposure with college coaches and things like that. You know what? Play a smaller schedule, but play better in those events is going to be better for you in the end. I mean, people have to realize too, I mentioned obviously rest, recuperation, they need time to reflect in between the two. I mean, to get ready, if you're just finishing a tournament and then starting another one, you don't have time to even analyze what you did. And then from a swing standpoint, as a coach, we like to see people have some time to calibrate themselves. They get themselves off a little bit with their alignment, with their feel or whatever. They can't just jump right back into competition again and not have time to make those adjustments and then get ready again. So, the best players in the world, and, Cam has obviously mentioned, and how these top other players in the world have things sort of dialed in, that's part of it. It's scheduling yourself so that you're not overscheduled, that you have time to do all the other parts that you need to do to get ready for the next event and not just play for the sake of playing.
I agree.
All right. Moving on to the Masters. Someone asked me a question here, and I never really thought about it, but the Masters this year falls on the Easter weekend. So I had to do a little bit of research because mm-hmm. they asked me, does the Masters being on over the Easter weekend increase viewership or hurt it? So I had to go back and do a couple things. One, I had to find out how many times the Masters has been played on Easter weekend. When we talk viewership, obviously that's important to know when there was TV, when it started, as far as ratings.
What was it like when the Masters wasn't on TV?
Stop. Yeah, well, we'd watch it, you know, through the...
Morse code on the radio?
Radio, yeah, exactly.
Oh, my God, Jack just... He hit... He made... Par.
Oh, God. Anyways.
So I guess I could have hit the mic then.
Yeah, you could have. You could have made some better sound effects and really sold that. But yeah. Anyways, it's happened 18 times in the history of the Masters that it's fallen on Easter weekend. The last time before this year was 2012. Now, TV ratings have only been available since 1958. So I had to dig back. Again, like I said, I had to go back and do some research on this. But what I found out, though, was, you know, viewership for the Masters really doesn't correlate much to the holidays. It really correlates more with who's playing, how they're playing. And obviously, you can imagine when Tiger wins or Tiger was in contention, that obviously has the greatest ratings.
Really?
Yeah, shocking. And then going back...
Not when Charles Schwartzel's in there?
No. And then going back to that as well, Jack Nicklaus, some of the biggest ratings were his wins in 66, 72, and 75. So, you know, for the listener that asked about this, it doesn't really change much. It's a small factor in there. I mean, people are going to watch the Masters if it's exciting and they have players that they want to see do well, play well. And that's what it really comes down to.
And I also say nothing brings more listeners to a podcast than talking about ratings from the TV.
Yeah,
that's a saying I bring up quite often. I will say this. I have to figure out some things around the Masters this year because
you got the Easter obligations.
The Sunday
is
my wife's birthday.
Oh.
And it's a big one this year.
Oh.
It's the big 3-0.
Oh.
So...
So enjoy the replay.
So next, I'm going to throw my phone in the lake and then record it.
They have a wonderful app.
But if anybody can open up the Scott's DMs are open. Anyone has any ideas of how I can get out of a birthday party on the Sunday? Here's my initial plan. Throw a big one on the Saturday, so she's like hurting on the Sunday. Major hangover can't get out of bed.
And then hope for another Sunday morning playoff or Sunday morning TV broadcast?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. And then we'll be good. But that's my plan right now. If you guys have a better one, I'm open to suggestions.
That's pretty funny, actually. So good luck with that. All right. Another listener asked, what are you excited about the most for equipment in 2020? Now, this is an important thing for me right now. So I'm just getting ready to head to the annual PGA merchandise show for the 20th.
Hey, you won't be here next week.
I will not.
Sorry. I have a secret co-host lined up.
Oh, boy. I am about to attend that show for the 28th time. And you're right. How old? 30?
Yeah.
Yeah, so think about that. Anyways, as far as equipment is concerned, looked at a lot of product, tested a lot of product in the last little while. It's been quite interesting. There's some great drivers that are out there, but drivers are not something I jump to all
it's
the time
not,
to
it's
look
not
for.
It's not sexy for me anymore.
You know what? The thing is, and we've talked about it a little bit, the gains are marginal of what's there. So
you mean... I'm not going to gain another 10 yards this
year? No, not particularly, unless you're fitted properly and you weren't fitted properly before, and something comes out that maybe fits into you better than what's been out and available on the market. So, that said, for me, fairway woods this year, there's a lot with hotter faces, easier to launch. And so easier launch is more exciting for me because I look at that from the sake of the average golfer. A lot of the average golfers really struggle trying to hit a 3-wood in the air.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of the models that you're going to see this year are much easier to launch in the air. Just with the materials and the designs, you're able to push that center of gravity back a little further to launch that ball in the air better. So that's a big thing as well. Also, the continuing growth and acceptance of the easier to hit iron designs. I mean, we've obviously seen a lot of hollow cavity irons out on the market. There's definitely more acceptance for them, more that are kind of crossover from the iron hybrid market. And then people are, you know, realizing it's more important to have something in my bag that I can hit well than just something that just looks good. And we're already seeing, you know, you're going to see it in the next little while. I mean, Dustin Johnson's put a hybrid in his bag.
That's pretty big news.
Right. And we're going to see Rory McIlroy probably put a hybrid in his bag, which was huge as well. This is a guy who's always played a 2-iron. And I think that's a lesson for the average player that's out there is that, you know what, don't worry about what it looks like to your buddies. Mm-hmm. Get the clubs in your bag that you can hit well.
These are not guys that, and for the doubters out there, these are not guys that will put clubs in their bag for money.
No, not at all.
Unless TaylorMade's giving them $50 million. Yeah,
no.
Rory's not getting on his couch for $50,000. Unless TaylorMade's giving $50 million to put a hybrid in his bag, he's not doing it. It's just not happening. That actually had me excited. I'm not gonna lie. That I've had the same problems as Dustin, probably more of a swing issue than anything, where I can't find hybrids that don't go left.
Right.
I don't know if you heard 2014 Fitter of the Year. I tried everything with mine. Like I would do extra stiff flex with like a wide open face and like mid-sized grip on a hybrid. It's going left. Like no, I couldn't find a hybrid that worked for me. So that excites me a lot. I've always kind of been that three iron driving iron mm-hmm. guy. So that really excites me. Putters. There's a lot of new putters out there. I had the new Scotty Cameron in my hand prior to it being released. That looks great. Ping's yeah. coming out soon. Every brand comes out with new putters, but you know there are the brands that you look for. There's new wedges coming out. That wedges kind of excite me. They're small changes, but wedges are that club you use. I mean, if you're bad, you use it on every hole.
Yeah.
So you look at that. But yeah, who knows? You know, Mura's. I saw Mura has these new.
Yeah, the 201s. Yeah.
Oh man, like I could go on forever. That's the thing. If you want me to go on, you slide into my DMs and we'll chat. We'll chat clubs. I won't stop.
We'll be talking a lot after I come back from the PGA show. I mean,
we'll have interviews. We'll have all sorts of things. Yeah. And Scott's gonna have very specific details. Maybe we'll give you a call next week. Who knows? And we'll get a quick chat with you about what you saw. There's so much equipment stuff. Just go on we pump these guys up because if somebody does it better, I apologize, but no one does it better than Golf WRX for this stuff.
Especially the tour photos. Greg Moore does a great job. We've mentioned Greg before, gets that early access to see the stuff out on tour, seeing the prototypes and stuff. And that's sort of, you know, where we see it. I will admit, for myself, I'm under a lot of embargoes just because I get early access to see stuff, to be able to write about it and things. Generally, I'll do preview stories, but I usually won't do something extensive unless I get to test it. I mean, that's really important to me. Not that how I hit it is going to make a difference to the average golfer, but it's just being able to have an educated opinion on some different features of it and how they might be applicable to somebody. So your biggest thing is obviously, you know, testing and fitting and there's no magic there.
Well, I do know this. The most excited I am for equipment this year is the new irons I've ordered. Now, I said on this podcast I wasn't going to order new irons, but I have a problem. I have a problem.
You do.
And I you know what? I think I found my way out of the Masters Sunday. If I just keep ordering new golf clubs, I won't have a wife, so I'll just be able to watch the Masters in peace. So if that was your suggestion, folks, you don't need to send that to me because I've thought about it. And it's a very expensive way to watch the Masters.
It is a very, very expensive way to watch the Masters. But hey, you never know. The Masters could be worth it.
Could be.
All right. Our last mailbag question comes from a past guest, Hannah Hellyer, a Symetra Tour player last year, who's now down in Australia. She's getting ready to play in the Australian LPGA, their qualifying school. Her and three other Canadians are down there, Robin Doig, Meg Osland, and Anna Young, and herself. And she sent me she's just trying to mess with me. You know what she's like. If you go back and listen to the podcast, Hannah's a great girl. She's got a personality. She's fun. She's trying to dig the needle into me a little bit. But she asked me about the fab fashion colors of the season. Ooh. And you know what? I am not going to step back from that. I'm going to take that on.
All right. Do you want to go first?
Yeah. So basically, I dug through all my fashion blogs and did my research. And
like
went
Vogue
through.
And...
grainier than that. No, not the fluffy stuff.
I know you like that stuff,
just
though.
Just the real hardcore fashion bloggers. I referenced a few friends that are in that type of industry and stuff, and then said, you know, what's out, what's in, and then cross-referenced some of the things I'm seeing in the golf industry as well, and what I'm getting is a lot of grays and blues. Greens are out. Orange is heavy on the runways, but of course they're throwing names at me like Frost Gray and Paloma. I don't know. What's Paloma? Gray. I mean... Galaxy
Paloma
Blue.
Sounds like a disease.
Bluestone and things like this. But basically, Hannah, grays, blues, greens are out, oranges are in, There you go. Yeah, roll with it.
All right, I'm going a different route than that. I don't need to get that specific.
You did some actual research on this?
No, I'm going on my what I'm seeing that I'm liking. How about this?
Okay.
Well, here's my first thing. White belts.
Oh, God.
They're out.
Get rid of them.
However, I'll give you two ways white belts are in.
How many white belts do you own?
I don't have one anymore.
Oh, good.
So white belts only work if you're wearing white pants or a white shirt. Anything else, you're not wearing a white belt.
Interesting.
Why don't we go back to the basics real quick?
And quickly, before we get too far with the fashion stuff, quick shout out to good friend Mike McAllister, Chapeau Noir on Twitter, who's a big fashion guy, did a lot of writing for PGA Tour.
That is a hat black.
Yes,
black
it is.
Hat.
Mike has had some health battles, and he's dealing with that. And just a big shout out to him as he's making his recovery. A lot of people in the golf journalism scene and the golf fashion scene are looking out for Mike, and a big shout out for him.
Well, he's the one that I believe taught me that you're actually supposed to match your belt to your shirt.
There you go.
In golf, that is what you're supposed to do. Match your belt to your shirt is what they've been saying for a while, I guess.
That's interesting.
Which I guess is the kind of, there's a difference in color there and whatever. Point is, what I'm getting to, I'm just going to give a quick basics, because there's a lot of guys in the golf that play golf that just can't pay attention to golf. Maybe they're colorblind. Can't pay attention to fashion.
Okay.
And maybe they're colorblind. If you are wearing blue, you're wearing blue. Brown looks good with blue. Black and blue, not necessarily that great of a fit. It can work. Generally speaking, try the brown with the blue. It will work. So that's just my first tip. That with your white belt, make sure white goes with white. Now, in terms of what I'm seeing from a...
Do we need a whole new segment on the show here? I hope not.
Fashion with Scott?
No. All right, keep going.
Fashion with you would be go in your closet, find a quarter zip that you got for free, match a pair of pants that match the quarter zip.
Guilty.
Throw on some... spikeless golf shoes.
Guilty.
And then go out and go wherever you got to go to your daughter's volleyball game or
there
whatever.
You go. Guilty.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, get better grip on the court with golf shoes. What I'm going to say is a lot of good brands, though, that are catching my eye this year. Puma's come out with some nice stuff. I'm finding that that slim fit is really in right now.
Mm-hmm.
And find an inseam that works for your legs. Past the knee. If it's hitting your knee, it's gone too far nowadays with shorts. So that's another thing to look out for. Penguin Golf is making some great stuff lately. Really liking that. Got a little bit of flash to it. If you're looking for something that's a little bit not as flashy, Level Wear is making some really nice stuff.
Yeah, Level Wear does some great stuff. FootJoy's got some really cool stuff for 2020. You're going to see that.
FootJoy's turning around because they used to be the old man clothing line.
True.
But I got to give them credit. They've gone from the baggy stuff, the more form-fitting stuff, so look out for FootJoy.
They got some
cool
limited edition shoes that'll be coming out. I had a quick look at some stuff that's going to be coming out this week.
Nice.
That you will see, and some good stuff at the PGA show. I mean, there's some fabulous brands.
What are your thoughts about, I saw this on Twitter recently, that this is actually the worst generation for clothing in terms of golf. Like, if you look back, I know if you like, maybe it's not necessarily the word, it's the least memorable is how I guess what I would describe it.
Yeah, I would agree with that, because I think what you get sometimes is you end up in certain eras where there's a uniform.
Yeah.
and I think that's where it
in a uniform.
Yeah, and that's where it becomes not memorable, when you see sort of people just, and you know what I'm saying? Not saying go out and wear loudmouth stuff or whatever the case. You know, again, whatever you're happy with, but you're right. You get a lot of people, and everybody jokes about the PGA show. You'll see it in the next little while. They put out a ranking of your different shades of khaki that you'll see during the PGA show and all, and it is a little bit bland. I would say there's options that are out there. I think some people are taking a little bit more risk, but I would say we're coming out of a period that was not memorable, and now we're seeing companies take a little bit more risk and blend in some outside of golf fashion into their products.
Ricky Fowler wearing that interesting outfit, which I love.
The pineapple stuff.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
I think that's where we need to go. We've just gotten, we're in the generation of social media and going viral. Try something new. Get exciting. Who cares? I what I'm past is this whole, if you're going to wear that, you better be able to shoot even par.
No,
like,
no.
You know what? Wear whatever,
yeah, whatever you want. I love my trip to Linksole and going and looking at their products and stuff. And, you know, they might be a little bit more traditional, but they have a lot of surfer influence that's there. You know, maybe more subtle tones, not as much, you know, bright colors and things like that. But again, it's whatever makes you happy out on the golf course, but don't feel that you have to dress like everyone else.
All right. I appreciate that. All right. We got anything else in the mailbag?
No, that was good. I mean, we had some lengthy, deep questions this week, and we certainly appreciate it, and keep those coming, and we'll answer some more as we go ahead and further shows.
All right. Well, it's going to be no tip of the week next week. Because you're not here. So this better be a good one, because I'm going to be doing this. Whatever you tell me here, I'm going to be doing this for 2 weeks in a row.
All right.
So here's the tip of the week.
Here's the tip of the week. One of the things a lot of people worry about a lot of the times, and you'll see it in their full swing, they'll see it in their putting stroke. A lot of people worry about making perfect putting strokes, and they worry about making perfect golf swings. Well, when it comes down to putting, you can have a perfect putting stroke, but if you can't aim properly, it's no use.
If you can't read a green, then
no. So sometimes what happens is that you get players that within a stroke, they're able to adapt their stroke to what they're trying to do. And if you all of a sudden teach them something different, it's not going to work out that well. So the biggest thing for people to know, and then one of the fundamentals, is their ability to read greens. And I know for myself, having gone through it, that was the one thing that was really lacking for me in reading greens. And I was able to work with John Graham, who I've mentioned on the show before, you know, who works with some tremendous players, be it, you know, Danny Willett or Charles Howell III.
Andy McWilliams.
Yeah. So, I mean.
No?
Yeah. Okay. Andy too. Yeah, sure. You know, he's fabulous with that. And he really starts there. It is a skill that you can develop, and you don't have to be physically strong to be able to do it, to be able to read greens, but you need to spend time developing that skill, and you need to understand that. And working with a coach that maybe has a tool like a perfect putter, which can roll a putt without you know, a person doing it, and you can actually see how a ball will actually roll and be influenced, and actually learn to read greens really, really well, will serve you well, and sometimes much better than just learning to have a perfect stroke.
I like it. I don't know how I'm going to practice that for 2 weeks. I guess no. I'm going to be reading the green on my flat surface carpet.
There you go.
For 2 weeks straight. You're going to come back here in the studio in 2 weeks. I'm still going to be down there like Camilo Vajagas, just
no, not lying
full
on the
spider,
no.
Yeah. Working my core, reading the green there on my flat putting green. All right, well, that's episode 2 for season 2. We hope you enjoyed it. We appreciate Cam coming on the podcast. We wish him luck this week as we head to some tournament that I forget the name of.
It's the Amex tournament, which is a rename. That's the former Bob Hope Classic.
That's
and the Amex is being played in La Quinta, California.
Absolutely. All right. Well, before we go, what do we got to do? We got to tell them what to do. Where can they follow you?
You got to subscribe, got to follow us. So either subscribe or leave a review on either Apple Podcasts or Spotify. And also you can follow us on Flagstick Golf on Instagram or at Flagstick on Twitter as well.
Perfect. All right, folks. Well, we appreciate you listening. We will be back. I will be back next week with a secret co-host. Whoever will basically show up is basically going to be the co-host with me.
And you
week.
Never know, I might chime in. Although, depending on the night that we do the recording, I might be at an event, but who knows?
Who knows? All right, folks, we will be back next week. Slow motion in a day like today, my boat's lost in the ocean.